Hi everybody, I'm Stevie B. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Member of the Golden Text group in Dania Beach, Florida. And I was just laughing a second ago because I was looking over at my roommates from 18 years ago in our halfway house that Jeff Weinstein is here tonight. He was the manager, mentor, guide, guru for us. And I remember, it just hit me for the first time in 18 years that I said to Eddie on a Tuesday night, he was watching this show called American Idol. And I thought it was very, like, soft. Like, I'm from New York. Mason's, like, from New York. And Eddie is, like, cooking, and he's watching American Idol. And I remember saying to Eddie, Eddie, this show's never going to make it. It was, like, the third episode. I'm like, Eddie, what are you watching? He's like, this is American Idol. I'm like, Eddie, that show will never make it. It was the first, you know, three episodes of the season. By episode 7, I was crying. Kelly Clarkson was singing this anthem. I was like, I was 3 months sober. And she came on and she sang her anthem. I was like, this is the greatest show that's ever happened. And then I bought tickets to the live show.
15 people.
I tell you what, contempt prior to investigation. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I'd be living this life. And I look over at a whole bunch of people, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just met a woman on the way in here tonight, and I could see she was new. And what I want to say, I'm gonna say this to everybody, and I want to tell you where I learned this line, but I've said it in every step series I've ever done for a long time, and it's from that man there, from Paul E. And I want to let you know that if you're here tonight, you're off the hook. And when I heard him say that, 25 years ago at a meeting at the 12-step house, when he said, if you're here tonight, you're off the hook. I thought, and this is no joke, I thought, I'm only on the hook. I mean, why would I even want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous? I have to be here. I'm 22 years old. My life is now doomed. I enjoy drinking. My only problem is that I added drugs to the drinking, and now I have a drug problem. And I thought, for a guy like me, this is the worst possible thing that could ever happen. And look what happened 25 years later, 20 to 27 years later, it turns out to be the greatest thing. So if you're here tonight and you are new, right? Where's Mike DeGenerate? Mike from Jersey, he's new. He's still burping up Xanax from a couple days ago. He's thinking, what am I doing here at a church in Boca? Listen to this guy. I'm detoxing in the third row. You know how I got him to a meeting last night? I told him, because he's new, he's brand new, he's never been to AA, and I told him they gave away Xanax at the door, and he was like so excited. And I saw him in the meeting, and he was looking so upset, and I'm like, after the meeting, after the meeting, after the meeting. And I promised him the same thing here tonight. What we're going to offer you, Mike, is even better than that. We're gonna share with you a new way of life. Well, you never have to pick up another drink or drug for the rest of your life, one day at a time. And I heard Paul Efron say that. Paul E., I heard him say that when I was 23 years old. And I didn't understand it. I didn't think I needed it. I thought I had a problem with one substance and one substance only, and that was cocaine. I certainly did not have a problem with alcohol. I didn't even start drinking alcohol. I mean, I dabbled in it, but it wasn't like something that I was not addicted to it. I thought it was a whole different thing. I always thought drugs and alcohol were two different things. Tonight's the fourth step. By the way, thank you so much, Paul. I heard the meeting was fantastic last week. Those are the people, Paul E., Paul. Those are the people that paved the way for us, that were responsible so that we have a place to come to 35, 30, 39 years later, 40 now, 40 coming up. God willing, coming up. Absolutely. His will. This is the greatest ticket on planet Earth. We're going to come here tonight. We're going to talk about God. I was at dinner with one of my friends tonight, and he's talking about a higher power. He's talking about the universe, and the universe, and a higher power. And I said to him, when you need help, who do you go to? I mean, it seems like you got a lot of people you got to pray to. You got the universe, you got a higher power, you got, what was the other thing he said? Energy source. I mean, you really got to identify which exact situation you're going through depending on what you need to pray to. If you have all those different things, you have a higher power, you have an energy source, you have universe. I said, and what if you just could go to God? And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about God. And you're going to probably say, well, how are we going to talk about God when it's the fourth step? We're going to talk about God in every step, because God is the only one that is going to fill this hole. Right, Margo? He's the only God that's going to fill this hole. And I tried to fill it with everything. And I know that some of you understand what that is. We tried to fill it with money, right? We tried to fill it with relationships, with drugs, with alcohol. And nothing ever worked, because right after the substance or the sex or the... It always leaves you wanting. But you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we hear a meeting about God, and we leave the meeting, and it's the best meeting we've ever been to. We always say, this is the best meeting. But it doesn't matter who's speaking. It's the best meeting we've ever been to. Doesn't matter who's doing the message, because what I say and what you hear are usually two different things. My sponsor, Russell Spatz, says, he may have said chicken on the roof, and you heard the pigeon in the barn, and because God on the way over the message, it changed the message for you, and you needed to hear exactly what you needed to hear. 2 weeks ago, one of my sponsees, he gave me a critique. He gave me a critique. He sends me a text. He says, listen, I've heard you a lot of times, and I love you, but on a scale of 1 to 10, this was a 4. So he graded me a 4. One of my mentors, who I love, who's in my life, he's got 51 years of sobriety. He texted me the next day and he said to me, the way you said remarkable was remarkable. He's from the Bronx, so he doesn't have a lot of words. You know what I mean? He's very direct. He's like, when you said remarkable, is that in the big book? I go, yeah, it's in the, you've been around 51 years, D, it's in the big. But he goes, that was remarkable. That man with 51 years, a couple weeks ago, he needed to hear remarkable. When we come to AA expecting, all sorts of remarkable things are going to happen. And we are going to have a life beyond our wildest dreams. I would have settled in 1993, on February 7th, I would have settled for one night not thinking about crack and alcohol. Really just crack. If you would have told me that I could get 24, and I'm sorry to use the word crackhead. It's not going to be a meeting about drugs. You know, someone said last week, I thought it was very cool, a young person, his first time he ever spoke, he said he wants to apologize that he was going to bring up drugs all the time, but it's just part of his story. And he said, and he wish it wasn't, but it is. It's just part of my story. You know, I wish I could come up here and tell you that I peeped out of a hotel room for 3 days on whiskey. I wish I could come up and say that. I wish I could tell you that after 3 days of being up straight and thinking the police were going to rush the house from drinking Grand Marnier, that I rolled myself up in a carpet because I thought it was a great hiding place. But that's not what happened. The drugs that I used created the sensations that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that offends people. I know it does. But there's an incredible story in the third edition of Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book called Dr. Alcoholic and Addict, what makes me feel perfect being in here. And then in the fourth edition, because so many people were like, what, the addict is in the big book, they change it to acceptance, but it's still the same story on page 417. And he talks about how drugs brought him to Alcoholics Anonymous. Drugs brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous brought me to God. And whatever the drug is, whether it's alcohol or another form of alcohol, it's still a drug, right? It's still a drug. And so when I came in, when I was 22 years old, I came in specifically for this one substance. And through the years, I was sober 6 years. And in my sixth year of sobriety, I was sure that I was going to be able to drink. And I'm sure that there's people in here tonight that believe that they could drink. That as long as you don't go back to drugs, you can drink. And I believed it. And I started to tell myself that, and I started to tell myself the lie that alcohol was different than a drug. And it's because I came in at 22, and now that I was 31, and now newly married to a beautiful woman from the country of Colombia, Sandra, and two businesses, and muscles. I had muscles. Back then I had muscles on top of muscles. I mean, I was taking enhancements for those muscles, you know. I'm not saying I was pure muscles. I was pure chemically induced muscles, but I had them. I decided that in my seventh year of sobriety that I would drink. And I decided I was not going to drink alcoholically, but I was going to drink. And during that year and a half, I created a lot of wreckage in my current life because I was newly married, just a couple months. And when I finally had the blessing of sobering up in Jeff's house with these two guys as my roommates, there was a lot of wreckage that I needed to take a look at. I'm sure that some of you understand about wreckage. You know what wreckage is? You wrecked your life. But that would be fine if I just wrecked my life. I wrecked other people's lives. Here's my beautiful little wife, and she comes to the country of United States. Is that a country? Comes to the United States. From the country of Colombia, and she leaves the cocaine capital of the world, and she moves to the U.S. and marries a cocaine addict. How that happened to that poor woman, I don't know. But it did. And here she is, she would wait at night, and this part is not funny, there's nothing funny, and she would wait at night for her new husband that she loved to come home, and I didn't come home. She eventually left the country, and she went back after 10 years to Colombia, and she was going to stay there, but our love was, she loved me, and I definitely loved her, and she came back during the week of 9/11, and her whole family was freaked out about what happened here in the United States. The whole world was watching. But I was high out of my mind. And I didn't really understand the full effect of what just happened. Even though we just lost our very, very dear friend in the Twin Tower attacks. And Jill, she died in there. And it was a devastating thing for my family. I couldn't really fully receive it because I was high. And to me, and this is no joke, and you know I would never make a joke at this time, I was watching the Twin Towers fall and my friends dying in there, and I thought I was watching a movie. I was so deluded, I was so delusional that I was void of reality. My wife left, and she came back during that time. And I don't know if you understand during that time, if you flew, but flying, especially from the country of Colombia during the week of 9/11, was not easy. It was brutal. And she was searched and researched, and it was a very, very serious thing. And the airports were serious things, and getting here was a serious thing. And she was in the airport for hours, and she called me from a payphone. And she said, "Sweetheart, I'm here." And I said, "I'll be right there." And then I proceeded to get loaded. And she called me back an hour later. And she said, "Honey, I'm here. I'm in the Miami airport. I'm here." Her birthday was that week. And she said, "Honey, I'm here." And I said, "I'll be right there." And the part of me that loves her and loved her wanted to leave and get in the car and drive. But the part that was totally addicted and totally powerless could not get in the car. And I said, I'll be right there. And I couldn't get away from my real mistress. And eventually I made up a story and I called up my 75-year-old. I called my 70-year-old dad. And I said, Dad, I've been in a car accident. Can you please go down and pick up Sandra from the Miami airport? And my dad went down and picked up Sandra in the Miami airport. And I had all the intentions of being a great husband, and I turned out to be a bum. I was a bum. So when it came to the fourth step, and I had to write this stuff down, to see it in front of me was very emotional. To write down that the next day, the day after she got in, the day after her birthday, I show up from a run, lips completely burnt, balloons that were purchased yesterday, so the helium was out, and I walk in, not slept. Happy birthday! And to look at my wife, looking at the balloons, half heliumed out, knowing that I was coming in from a run. In the fourth step, we have to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, I'm just going to ask you for participation in this meeting right now, and I'm going to ask everyone that has not, I'm not going to ask you if you've done the fourth step, because this is really a catch-all. If you haven't done the fourth step, you're on the fourth step, and that could go on for years. So what I'm going to ask you is this. Everyone that has not done the fifth step in their current sobriety, and this is not to shame you, I want to share something with you. This is going to help you. If you have not done the fifth step in your current sobriety, raise your hand. You're a liar. I'm going to say this question over again, because it's like four people. So other than the four people that raised their hand, everyone's in the... Let me just say this again, because I can see it's not going well. Four people raised their hand. I brought 12 that I know you didn't do it. There's 12 right there. So that didn't even fly with the people I know. Mike, you didn't even raise your hand. You don't even know what I'm talking about. You're still waiting for Xanax. Raise your hand. You're not getting any pills at the end of this meeting the way you're participating. We're judging you on your participation. You may get nothing tonight. Let me make it easier. Raise your hand if you've done the fifth step in any of your sobrieties. Okay, thank you. The fourth and fifth step will be one of the most freeing things you've ever done. And what happens is, because it's the first step, that people actually start to write. Because if I really asked you who's done the first three steps, even though you really haven't done the first three steps because there's no real writing, if I really asked that question, every person in here is going to raise their hand besides Mike. Every person in here is going to raise their hand. Because I really can't check. You can't check if you've done the third step. How do I know if you've made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God? I can't check that. But when it comes to the fourth step, people get stuck on it for years. And what I want to say to you is, why? Why would you not want to be free? How free do you want to be? Get that stuff out. When I wrote down that I left my wife in the airport and shared it with my sponsor, the moment I shared it with my sponsor, it was not mine anymore. When I admit to myself, to God, and to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs in step five, and I told my sponsor, Jerry Bear, and then Russell, listen, I left my wife at the airport in Miami and lied to my senior citizen dad about being in a car accident, and I'm a bum. The moment I said it, and he said, where were you wrong in this situation? The fifth column, where are you wrong? And I said, I was wrong in everything. I was free of that situation. Now, does that mean my wife has forgiven me? No, we're going to talk about that in step 9 a couple weeks from now. But I was able to leave it there at the fifth step. Why would we want to walk around with all our garbage? And then we're sitting in the meeting and we're talking to ourselves. No one's sitting next to us. We're having a conversation with the committee. We're going like, that person, look what they're wearing. And they suck. And they, And then you wonder why you're having trouble meeting people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you have multiple personalities that you're bringing to a meeting. At least leave one at home. Who's that, Teresa? What's wrong, Teresa? So the fourth and fifth step is a step you can really say to yourself is, how free do you want to be? And really, we could say that in all the steps. How free do you want to be? You want to be half free? I bet you if you were here last week for Paul, you'd know that he's really free. Paul's really free. You hug him, you say, God bless you. And he goes, yeah. He gives you like an uncomfortable hug because he hugs like for an uncomfortable long amount of time. You know, he doesn't just give you the typical hug. Paul gives you the, I've been set free. I'm actualized and I'm doing amazing in life and I love God. And he gives you like a 40-second hug, which for me is still, after all these years, it's still tough. But so I go to hug Paul and I go, how are, I go, God bless you. And he goes, he has. And I just can't wait for him to let me go because I'm still like newly. So I'm like, I'm coming on my 18th year. But I mean, compared to Paul, I'm still like jittery. You know what I'm saying? He's free. That's a free man. He's a free, is he a perfect man? No, he's a free man. You betcha. How free do you want to be? You want to do half the steps? You want to do halfway? You want to do half measures and hope that it avails you something? I want to be as free as possible. And I want to tell you something with the fourth step. Don't worry about making a perfect fourth step. Just make a fourth step. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory the best you can in your sobriety right now. And doesn't have to be perfect, but it's got to be searching and fearless. My sponsor, Jerry, at the time, this tough Jewish guy from New York, he painted this picture for me. I was living with the guys, and I asked Jeff if I could go out to California, and I got the pass to go out to California. My sponsor painted me this beautiful picture of how we were going to... He's Jewish, but he knows that I'm Christian, so he's like, we're going to go to the top of the mountain in the Muir Woods. I've never been to California as of this time. And he says, we're going to go to the Muir Woods, the Redwood Forest, from the song, America, you know the song. America, beautiful, beautiful America, you know. And he said, we're going to go to the top of the mountain. And at the top of the mountain, there's a giant cross. And we're going to sit under that cross, and you're going to tell me your fifth step, and it's going to be amazing, and your God that you're sitting under the cross, it's gonna be beautiful and it's gonna be an incredible experience. And I got out there to California and we couldn't get to the cross. For some reason, there was a camp there and kids and we couldn't get to the cross. So Elliot says to me, we're gonna go to the Pacific Coast Highway. And it's the most beautiful highway you've ever seen. It's the highway where they don't have any guardrails. It's gorgeous. And we're gonna talk to God. And we go in the opposite direction of the Pacific Coast Highway. The Pacific Coast Highway is west. We go east. We're never going to hit the Pacific Coast Highway like that. And I said, Jerry, this does not look like we're going towards the ocean. And he says, pull over. And it was a rest stop in a town where they have chicken farms. Like Picaloxa, California, you know, something like that. And the whole place stinks of chicken poop. You know what I'm talking about. It's near the, if you know California, it stinks, right? What is it called? Palalusa or something? Petaluma. We're in Petaluma and there's no giant cross. There's no ocean. We're in Petaluma and it stinks. I got a honker that could smell this stuff from New York. And he goes, pull over. I go, Jerry, this doesn't look very spiritual. This is a rest stop, a truck stop. He says, pull over, get the chairs out of the back. We're going to do it right here in the truck stop. I mean, I flew across the country for the cross experience. And we sat there in a little 10 by 10 piece of grass with a woman that kept coming by with her dog every time I talked about sexual conduct. And it was a spiritual experience. It didn't matter where the place was. When I started to tell him the stuff that I've done and the baggage just started to come off my shoulders and I talked about being a bum and I talked about cheating and I talked about stealing and I talked about things that I thought were the worst things in the planet. You know, I have the worst sexual stuff in the planet. He was sleeping in some of that stuff. I'm like, this is it. You know, I know this, you probably never heard this before. He's snoring. You know, I mean, none of it was something he never heard before. And I give it to him. You know, I give him the thing that I'm never going to tell anybody. And he's like, yeah, no, I've heard that. You know, let me tell you mine. And I heard his. And I realized I was a garden variety, drunk alcoholic addict, just like him. He has stuff. I have stuff. We have stuff. But we don't have to carry it around. And then I picked up the chairs and we were leaving. And I'm like, oh, man, that's great. And he says, come over here. He says, we're going to go to one more place, which he couldn't find. So he stopped at the side of the road and there was a sign, do not enter, private property. And he goes, go over that fence. And we go into this private property and there was a stream and we had our two chairs. And Jerry goes, what have you omitted? What didn't you tell me? The most beautiful thing about the fifth step, and I'm going to backtrack to the fourth step in a second. I just want to say the beautiful thing about the fifth step, it doesn't say admitted to God and ourselves. The reason it doesn't say admit to God and ourselves is because we're going to think some things are not big deals that really don't have to be admitted. It's between me and God that really need to be admitted to me, to another human person and God. Because I thought one of the things that I wasn't going to tell Jerry that was really turned out to be a felony, I'm thinking it's not really a big deal. It wasn't really, not a felony. I don't mean felony in terms of felony. I mean, it was not good. Okay? I mean, it could be a felony in some states, but it wasn't a felony in California. And so he says to me, tell me what you didn't tell me. Tell me now what you didn't tell me. And I said to him, well, there's this one thing that I've done. And he said to me, that's not okay. And I thought it was okay. As long as I still didn't do it currently. And he said, no, it's not okay. And I need you to tell me what it is. And guess what? I told him. And I was free. And I never had to do that behavior again. And it's going to come up, God willing, in January, 18 years later. And I was thinking it wasn't a big deal that I would still partake in the behavior. I know your mind's probably, it's not a big deal. It wasn't a big deal, but it was a big enough deal that I still wanted to do it. And I just wanted not to tell anybody about it. He's like, that's not okay for a sober man in recovery to do. A sober, faith-filled man in recovery. How free do you want to be? So when I gave it to him, I was free. The fourth step for me is a step that we talk about in AA. And we make it like, ooh. And I don't think we should make ooh. Right, Paul? I don't think we should do that. I think when someone says they're in their fourth step and they say something like this, I had to take off from work the next 2 weeks to write the fourth step. We tell them, don't be silly. Write it at lunch. It's not your memoirs. It's not a thesis. It's not going to kill you. And just write down the stuff you've done over your life so that you can share it with another person. I think what we do sometimes in AA, and I've seen it, is that someone says they're in the middle of the fourth step, and because other people that haven't done it, and everyone goes, ooh. And it's really just one of the steps. It turns out, I know this is shocking, but it turns out that we're very selfish. Alcoholics are very selfish. Did you know that? Alcoholics are very selfish. We don't like to admit that. You know, we like to be victims. We're phenomenal victims. But in the fourth step, there's going to be a column. And the column is, where were you wrong? Right? I slept with Mrs. Smith. No, Yeah, you could sleep with Mrs. Smith. You sleep with Mrs. Smith, and then the husband is angry at you, and you write that down, and that guy's giving me an attitude, and why is Mr. Smith giving me an attitude? And, well, you slept with his wife. So in the fourth step, you're really going to see where you're wrong. And I started to see in the fifth column, in the fourth step, over and over and over again, a lot of stuff that I did was selfish. Which is wonderful for me, who thought I was a victim. You know, I got shot in my eye. I don't know about you, but I have the alcoholic, I have an alcoholic anthem. I'm going to tell you all the stuff that's ever happened to me since I'm two, like within the first 15 minutes of meeting you. You say, hey, Steve, how you been? I did this to Paul when I first met him. And then being on steroids during the time, it just amped up my whole story, you know? So Paul's like, tell me a little about yourself, you know, kid. And I'm like, well, I was adopted and I'm half Jewish and I'm half Italian, which makes me bipolar. And I got shot in my eye and my dad adopted me and the whole entire thing. And he goes, no, I was just asking you how you did today. You know, that not asking you to vomit on me. So I have this alcoholic anthem that I want to tell you so you understand why I had to use. You know, I'm adopted. I got shot in the eye. My dad's Jewish. Yeah, I had an interracial family. You know, the whole nine yards that my whole shtick that I came up with. It turns out the reason I used is because I'm selfish. I'm not saying I don't have a disease. I'm not saying that. But the reason I continued to use is because I really think about me a lot. Like a lot. Like when I go and use and I tell you I'm going to pay you the rent and don't worry, sweetheart, you go to work and come home, everything's going to be fine, and you come home and the rent's not paid, that's selfish. When I tell you the car payment has been paid, don't worry, it's paid, and then your car gets repossessed because I didn't pay it, that's selfish. When I do things to you to hurt you, not because I want to hurt you, but because I'm trying to do self-preservation, that's selfish. And one of the most beautiful things in the fourth and fifth step is you really get to this place where you look at your character defects, which you may not know you have, and one of them is going to be selfishness. Joshua, did you know you're selfish? Yeah, you're selfish. You know, that's one of the things when you tell people they're selfish, they straighten up like this, like, I'm not selfish. You are selfish. If you're an alcoholic, selfishness and self-centeredness is to the core of our behavior. Yeah, I know people are looking now at their spouses and the people next to them and they're looking and wondering if they're selfish. They are selfish. But if you're an AA, you're also selfish. So just listen for yourself. And during that time, when I was writing my fifth step, my fourth step, I didn't see selfishness. I saw lust, you know, lust behavior. And I saw fist fighting. I'm from New York, and it, we don't really call it fist fighting. We call it conversation. And so I wrote down, I had all these conversations with other men, you know, and in bars. And my sponsor said to me, and Jerry Bear said this to me, you're not even nice. This is not something I would recommend now. Remember, this is 25 years ago. And I think now you have to use different terms. I don't know if that, it's a nicer AA today. But my sponsor says to me in the middle of the fifth step, he says to me, you're not even a nice person. I was shocked. I thought I was like the nicest person on the planet. Yes, I hit people sometimes and I stole cars and different things, but I brought stuff back. And he stopped me and he goes, you're not even a nice person. And I was offended by that. I said to him, who are you to judge me? You know? Well, the fourth step will do the work on judging you. And hopefully by the time you share the whole fifth step, you're going to see it. And I really saw it. You know, I really saw it. Every girl that I said that you're the only one and I'm going to call you tomorrow and I'm not single. You know, those three things. I'm single. You're the only one and I'll call you tomorrow. And none of those things were true. That's really selfish. That's someone's daughter. That's someone's sister. That's really selfish. Every time that I punched another guy in the face because I thought he was going to punch me first, that's really selfish. That's really self-seeking behavior. And every time that I thought about myself, other than a person I was in relation. I took this girl hostage in Minnesota because that's where I went to treatment. And in Minnesota, 30 years ago, is this beautiful land of milk and honey. Everyone looks like Paul over there. They're blonde and they're walking around and they have like Swedish accents. This is a beautiful place. And I took advantage of those people. You know, I told them I was friends with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci. And I mentioned every Italian guy from New York. And I took advantage of those people. They weren't used to that. They went in Minnesota. When you tell someone you know Joe Pesci, you're supposed to know Joe Pesci. But I took advantage of those people. And I talked one of these beautiful Viking women into living with me. A beautiful girl from Norway, a beautiful blonde, tall girl, Norwegian. She beautiful features and just beautiful. Her whole family was beautiful. And I came there and they thought I was funny. And they called, I forgot what they called spaghetti. But they had all these names for Italian things. And they thought I was like from My Cousin Vinny. And I destroyed their trust. I destroyed their trust. Every Italian person from New York after that would always be tainted but what I did by the lies. I didn't know any of those people. Sylvester Stallone, of course. I mean, you kidding me? Before that was before cell phones, so I couldn't just open up my cell phone, but I'm like, he just beat me. Right there, that's a beep from Sylvester, 143, that's from Sylvester Stallone. That means he loves me. Oh, 143, Sylvester Stallone. He loves me. And I took advantage of those beautiful people from the Midwest. I didn't see it at the time, though. On the fourth step, when I wrote down the word Jamie and I wrote her last name, and I wrote down what I did to her and her family, it was clear. This is not funny. I'm saying. And the fifth step, and the fourth step, it wasn't funny. It was taking advantage of people that are good-hearted people, that trust people. These people, when you tell them that you know somebody, it's because you know somebody. You don't make up stories. And what it was a great place for me to be with Jerry in the fifth step is that by the time it was finished, I felt a new freedom and a new happiness. The big book says we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And what's so great for me is I've always had a taint. I've always had a taint over my relationship with God. There was always a taint. I don't know if I'm using the right word, but there was always angst in my life. Angst. I was always have agita. I'm going to use different terms. One of them is going to apply to you. I always had agita from the time I was young. That's a term we use in New York. It means that from the time I was very young, I always had like something wrong inside. Okay? I always felt like something was a little bit missing. Like when I went to school, I felt like everybody in the classroom, they got the instructions on a day that I didn't even know there was instructions being given. And everyone seemed to be raising their hand at the right time. And that thing that goes around in the playground, that everyone pushes, if it's called the merry-go-round, okay? I didn't know that everyone's supposed to go in that direction, and I was always pushing in that direction. I always seemed to be dancing to my own drum beat. After the fifth step, I was a little less angst. I was a little less agita. I had a little less pit in my stomach. I felt a little bit more connected to you. I certainly felt more connected to the human being that was sitting in front of me that I just told all my deepest, darkest secrets, because this man was wise enough to tell me some of his. And there was a connection. Isn't this whole thing about connection? Isn't the whole thing, Paul, that we're doing in AA and NA connection? I have to mention NA. You'll understand if you know Paul. The whole thing is about connection. Kent, isn't it about connection? But if I have this 12-foot wall between me and you and I think I'm the worst and I'm the most perverted and I'm the most dishonest and I'm the most dirty and I'm the most everything, the 12-foot wall between you and me, I can't set up a connection. You understand? Right, Margo, do we have a connection? No, we don't have a connection. I always thought we did up until this very moment. You see, I'm shocked. I thought we had a connection. When we have connections with people in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's because, number one, is we realize that we can't do this alone. I can't, but we can. Number one. Number two is, if two people have already done their steps, a lot of that garbage is already gone. When you go to hug someone that is a real deal in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you go to hug them, like a heart-to-heart hug, that hug is like, we've been both set free. We've been both set free. I'm not at Paul's level where I could do the 42nd. That's serious. I mean, you don't get that at 18 years, okay? I have a lot of room to grow, and I'm excited about it. But eventually, you could get that heart-to-heart hug where you just hug somebody. When I hug someone in AA and I see them, when I see you, Cubby, and we just hugged just now at dinner, it's like I'm so grateful we've both been released. And speaking of dinner, and then I'm going to end, because God has been already so incredible in this meeting. I had dinner last week, and this happened to me once before years ago. John, my partner, took me to dinner. But I hadn't had it in 3 or 4 years, and I forgot about it. Because the restaurants that I usually eat at, which is Lester's and Tom Thumb Diner, they don't have this specific type of food. But last week I had lobster mac and cheese. I'm telling you, I know you think it's, you may have eaten it or may not have, but I'm telling you, there's places that in the mac and cheese, the macaroni and cheese, they put lobster. What I'm trying to explain to you is there's lobster inside the mac and cheese. Where you already think that mac and cheese is a perfect food, they had lobster. And I forgot about that. It'd been years. I told you about that, Jeff. Years ago, when I went over here, my partner took me to a beautiful place up here, like Ruth Chris or Morton's, or one of these places that I never eat at. And they had lobster mac and cheese. And everybody at the table, they were used to it. So they just passed the mac and cheese like it was regular mac and cheese. When I got it, I realized this is no regular mac and cheese. There's lobster in this. And remember, Cubby, how we made a big deal of it last week? Nobody really cared. Everybody had been eating lobster mac and cheese. But when you've never had lobster mac and cheese and you're a lobster fan and you go to put your fork in the lobster, in the mac and cheese, you don't know there's lobster in there because it's hidden. And you take a bite of the lobster and you think everybody at the table already knows, but you cannot contain your joy. Which is what happened to me last Thursday night. I had lobster mac and cheese, and everybody was acting like it was just regular mac and cheese, and I stopped everybody and said, excuse me. Do you realize there's lobster in... You heard me, Cubby. I stopped everybody from talking. I said, excuse me. This is lobster mac and cheese. And everybody looked over at me like, yeah, of course. That's the way I feel when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I've already done my fourth and fifth step and I'm like, I see you and there's a connection and I can't wait to hug you. It's like we've been set free and we get to eat lobster mac and cheese every single time we come to a meeting. I mean, how much better could it get than that? The whole world out there thinks that the only mac and cheese there is bacon mac and cheese or regular mac and cheese. But we know there's lobster mac and cheese. Now, I don't know if you're going to be able to get the message in that. But I feel very good about it. And God bless you. And listen, I'm not going to be here for a couple weeks. You have two amazing speakers. Two amazing speakers the next couple weeks. Paul says don't even come. You got to take a bus down to Trump National and to the Florida State Convention. Of course, that's going to be amazing. But you have two incredible speakers the next couple weeks. I want to tell you what the blessing is for me, what's going on with me. My parents, at 86 and 76, my dad was blind a month ago, like blind-ish, like he couldn't see. I'm not saying he was blind, but he couldn't see, which really is blind. They're in Europe right now, in Italy. Tomorrow they're going to be in Tuscany. Yesterday was their 50th anniversary. That's good. And 86, 76, they're still alive. My dad can see. His eyes healed during the trip. It got better. He went to the doctor. They did shots and everything. He's seeing the whole thing. They're walking around like two kids. And next week, I'm going to go to Long Island for their first surprise 50th party. They don't know anything about it. And it just, you know, it's one of those gifts. 17 and a half years ago when I was in Jeff's house, my parents went on a cruise and said, don't call me until you have 6 months. And they left the country so I couldn't get in touch with them. And this week I'm going up for their 50th anniversary. They love me. I love them. My sister loves me. They can't wait till I'm coming in. It's Alcoholics Anonymous and God, of course. Alcoholics Anonymous is going to bring you to God. God. Right? He's got a first name. And then God is going to restore your family. Now, does it always look exactly the way you want? Is everybody going to have a perfect relationship with their parents? I'm not saying that. But God is going to either restore your family or give you a new family or give you an Alcoholics Anonymous family or give you a sponsorship family, because he really wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And he really wants to give us the fellowship that we crave. And right now, I crave being with you. I crave being with my parents. I'm a very satisfied customer. I'm a very satisfied child of God. And it's been a great night tonight. God bless you guys.